This is Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Eric Thiel. Welcome to another JPR Live session. We've got a great one today. Joining me in the JPR studios is Jane Sibbery. Jane, welcome to JPR.
Thank you, Eric.
A real pleasure to have you in. You are currently out on a tour that is called the Holiday Hose and Hosers Tour?
Yeah.
Where did that name come from and what does that mean exactly?
All right, honestly, I was put on the spot, so I made it up. And then
it's a good way to do it.
I wasn't going to keep it, but then I found that having that title was starting to magnetize different songs I could use and different things I could say that I didn't normally have an opera. So the show's a lot about sexual energy and stuff like that, not about horrors or hoes. It's just about everything in society. And at the end of the show, the hoes are seen as healers also. And so are the hosers.
And you have been referring to this tour as a residency tour. What exactly does that mean?
Well, I didn't want to play a different city every night. I wanted to do like 5 days per city, if possible. And because word of mouth is a big deal, like I don't have a big publicity company, so people get excited at our shows, but then we're gone. So that's one reason. And the second reason is I wanted to stay somewhere and have production values, you know, someone doing the lights and sound night after night, and to hire local string players, etc., and to have a local celebrity guest too.
Well, you've never been here before, and I want to talk a little bit about your extensive career because you have been making music for a very long time. Definitely want to talk about what you're up to right now. But going back in time, all the way to the very end of the 1970s, you kind of started out as a coffee shop singer-songwriter, really from the folk tradition, correct?
Strummy strum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you didn't stick with it very long. Just a couple of years, and then you started to kind of transition into the sound that was very hot in the early 1980s, a little bit more electronic focused. Mm. Was that due to unrest making a particular kind of music or just following the trends of the day?
What do you think?
Probably, knowing what I know now, looking back at your career, probably just not being settled in any one place for very long. Because you seem to always be in transition.
Well, aren't we all? I mean...
Yeah.
As soon as I started playing with a band, then I went a bit cuckoo because I was no longer limited by my own pretty strummy guitar playing.
Yeah.
Crummy strummy. And so I went a bit crazy, like writing for a band now because they could play anything I wanted. And then when I went to studio, then all the textures and stuff were there. So I just continued on.
Were all of those textures that you just referenced things that you had in your head already, or did they come about because of your collaboration with the musicians that you were bringing on board?
Not so much from the musicians, but just trying to get closer to what I hear in my head, which wasn't really musicians or textures. It was more, how do you put pure music into words? I don't know. Mm.
Jane Sibbery is my guest live here on Jefferson Public Radio. Lots of information on her music, lots of her music, in fact, online at janesibbery.com. Also some wonderful links to some of the artwork that she creates we'll talk about a little bit later on. About 1980, I think, was really the first song of yours that became a quote-unquote hit, a rather unlikely tune to become a pop hit because it was something like 7.5 minutes long. Did you have any inkling that this was going to all of a sudden start making some waves?
No inkling at all. And it was a fluke. I take it as being a sign of the hand of the greater sort of stepping in. So things happen when they're supposed to, because it was 7 minutes and it had two monologues in it and it went from 3-4 to 4-4 to 7-8, which is not your standard pop song.
Yeah, not at all.
And sometimes people say, why don't you write a hit song like Mimi on the Beach again? But in fact, I think it's because the chorus was really simple and catchy. That was what people heard.
And it tended to get a lot of radio play at the time, correct?
Yes, because Canadian content pushed forward a lot of Canadians, and the video play was huge because they hardly had any videos yet.
Jane Sibbery is live in the JPR studios today. Information on her at janesibbery.com. Let's hear some music. What do you want to play first?
I'm going to play Calling All Angels, which is an older song. And Ali, my friend here, is going to sing a little bit too. Santa Maria, Santa Teresa, Santa Anna, Santa Susanna, Santa Cecilia, Santa Coppelia, Sister Mary Angelica, and Frater Ashad, and Frater Pietro, and Julianus, and Petronilla, Santa Santos, Miroslav Vladimir, and all the rest. Oh, a man is placed upon the steps, and a baby cries, and high above the church bells start to ring. And as the heaviness, the heaviness, oh, the body settles in, somewhere you can hear a mother sing. Then it's one foot, then the other, as you step out on the road. You step out on that road. How much weight? How much? Then it's how long and how far and how many times. Oh, before it's too late. Calling all angels, walk me through this one, don't leave me alone. Calling all angels, calling all angels, I'm trying and I'm hoping, but we're not sure how. On every day you gaze upon that sunset with such love and intensity. Why, it's almost as if, oh, if you could only crack the code, then you'd finally understand what this all means. Oh, and if you could, do you think you would trade in all the pain and suffering? Ah, but then you'd miss the beauty of the light upon this earth and the sweetness of a leaving. Calling all angels. Walk me through this one, don't leave me alone. Calling all angels, calling all angels. We're trying, we're hoping, we're loving and we're hurting. We're crying and we're calling, 'cause we're not sure how this goes.
That is Jane Sibbery live here on Jefferson Public Radio. Calling All Angels, a tune that goes all the way back to about 1993. Is it weird for you to have a song that everyone around the world basically knows? Is that an unusual feeling?
It's a lovely feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a connection. Yeah, it's really special. It's beyond just a song to me now. It's like it's been actually a bridge to a lot of things.
Did you ever go through a process with the song of liking the song, not liking the song because of what it had become on its own, and then falling in love with the song again?
Yeah.
Really? A period where you didn't really perform it ever?
Well, the reason I didn't perform it was because I thought I would wreck it if I played it live instead of... Because the recorded version is a lot of sustains, which gives a very different vibe. But now people wanted to hear it enough that I started playing it tentatively, and they could still connect through just an acoustic guitar. I never didn't like it, but I just had resistance to playing it. Now I play it almost every show.
You know, early on, you started your own record company. This was before a lot of people were doing this. Was that a result of growing unhappy with the way the music business worked?
No. Warner Brothers came to me and asked if I wanted to renew my contract, and I thought I would, but then they asked me if I'd take on a producer that they suggested. And as soon as I heard that, I understood what that meant. I was happy taking a cut in advances because I knew I was losing the money, and that didn't feel very good to me. But also, when I wanted to do other things, like I wanted to do a sister record to Maria. Maria was done, it didn't have a lot of, it had a lot of improvised music, which was beautiful, but didn't have repeating parts. So I said, I'll do you a companion record where I'll take all the catchy bits and turn them into like radio things you can work with. But they didn't know how to be flexible that way. And that's a big part of how I work. It's really fun to like have spin-off projects and let one project make you think of a new thing. I thought I'd have more freedom when I started my own record company, but I do creatively, but the limitation is cash. Mm. I didn't realize that would be such a hamperer. So now when I do a record, it's almost like buying a house every time. It's pretty stressful.
In that era, when you were recording for Warner, for Reprise, radio was a much bigger piece of the pie in terms of how to get your music out to fans or potentially new fans, as it is now with a lot of internet distribution and YouTube videos and Spotify and Pandora and everything. So was there pressure at the time, or rather direct pressure or indirect pressure, I guess, through the producer to make music that was a certain particular product that wasn't necessarily what you wanted to make as the artist Jane Sibbery?
Yeah, it's sensible to do that. If you're going to put out money for an artist to do a record, that makes sense. You just want to make sure that they're like that before you sign them. And I do write a certain amount of catchy songs. There's nothing more exciting than having a song that everyone that has a charge and everyone loves to sing along to, and it's like pushing a button and lights go off. But they didn't have many buttons on my record. It would have been very exciting if I had that kind of song, but every now and then I do, but not all the time.
It just seems like an unlikely decision for them, being in an era when sales were certainly important, as they always are, but radio play was important, to be catering to the music you create. We talked about how your first real hit was a 7.5-minute unlikely metered song, Calling All Angels, which was a huge hit. It's 5.5 minutes, which is a little long for a radio tune, but yet they were interested in what you had to say.
Yeah. Well, Lenny Warrenker was the president then. Do you know him? Mm-mm. Like, he produced a lot of Randy Newman's records. And Lenny's daughter is now a musician of her own, if you know any Warrenkers. But he's a real musician's musician. Like, and he was partly why I was signed. And I was considered a prestige artist. And I guess they have a mixture of ones that will make them a lot of money and ones that will make them look good.
Okay.
But at a certain point, I made them look good and lost them a lot of money. And I didn't like that. So things are much more peaceful now because I'm out of that scene, so I'm not like frustrated with it and stuff.
Jane Sibbery is here live on Jefferson Public Radio. We'll talk about her latest three releases, which are part of a trilogy that spans about 4 or 5 years in just a bit. But first, let's hear another tune. What do you want to play next?
I'll do another song. It's called You Had a Good Thing. And this is like the one and only song I've ever written, you know, where I'm sort of pointing the finger at someone. But as usual, the finger is long enough to turn around and point back at myself. You had a good thing, and you blew it. When it came right down to it, you couldn't get down to it. And what I'm talking about is treating someone right. We never saw our girlfriend so upset as when you were coming for the night. You had a good thing, and you blew it. When it came right down to it, you just couldn't get down to it. And I'm not talking flexibility here, I'm not talking Kama Sutra. But you'd only be nice to her when it would suit you. We'd watch her slam on her bustier when you were coming over and jab on her perfume. That's not right. We'd watch her slam on her stilettos, cram on her hat. She was doing her duty, but she was hissing like a cat. We'd watch her look in the mirror, unimpressed by what she saw. And yet this was a beautiful girl. We never saw her so stressed out as when you were coming for the night. You had a good thing, and you blew it. When it came right down, you couldn't get down to it. And want to hear about who she's seeing now and how she reacts when they're coming over for the night? You do want to hear that? Well, that's good, because first I'll go into major chords, which suit this better than minor chords. Well, she caresses her bustier and she dabs on her perfume. She doesn't jab it on, and she daubs on her lipstick. She doesn't slash it on like some maniacal heroine. And she thrills herself softly with her thong. And she looks in the mirror, and she loves what she sees. And she's pleased by her own glorious inner beauty. And she has so much enjoyment bringing her new lover to greater heights, just with a certain look and a crook of her finger, and she makes them laugh and happy, and it's so much fun, which is how it should be, isn't it? You had a good thing, and you blew it. When it came right down to it, you couldn't get down to it. Anyone could see that something wasn't right. We never saw a girlfriend so lonely as when you'd spend the night.
That is Jane Siberry live here on Jefferson Public Radio. Information on Jane Siberry at her website, janesiberry.com. Jane, earlier we talked about how my impression of you, and by all means correct me if I'm incorrect, but it is that you don't seem to want to ever settle much artistically. You are constantly evolving and on the move. When you perform live, other than how we just talked about Calling All Angels, do you look back much at your catalog in terms of set list, or are you always in the moment with what is currently on your plate musically?
I do both. It feels really great to have new songs because it's in the air for you. But oddly enough, some old songs come into the air again at different times. Like on this tour, well, say I'm playing solo and I'm just doing my own songs. I'm sometimes doing a song, You Don't Need Anybody, from my second record, because the music is needed in the solo show sometimes on some tours. Other times I need a different kind of music.
I mentioned just before you played that your last three releases have been part of a trilogy that spans 4 or 5 years. How did that all come about, and did you have the idea in your head before the first volume came out that it was going to be a trilogy of records?
No, I changed my name. I got rid of all my things. I went on tour, dropped the key in the mailbox for the real estate agent, and then I stayed wherever I ended up, which was Brussels. And I didn't know what to do with myself. All I knew is I was going to die if I stayed where I was, not physically, but I had to make strong moves. And so these were my strong moves. And I was in Brussels. Finally, I thought, I'll find someone with a little home studio and just start writing, because that's sort of what I do. And I went in every day and would write one song a day, not knowing where they would fit or whether I had a place in the musical world. And so I wrote about 30 songs and then finally came back to Canada and started putting them together. And I didn't know they'd make a trilogy. I didn't even know I'd release a record again. Maybe I did. It's hard to tell when I'm lying sometimes. But I thought I'd have a trilogy, but in fact I had a dilogy, two records, and the third one ended up being like a radio play, but still drawing from the same concepts of magic and integrity.
You had referred to them, their unofficial titles, as being sort of the front door, the library, and the kitchen?
Yeah, that's right.
Why?
Because as they gathered themselves, which if you're working with a bunch of songs, if you sequence songs, you'll know that happens. But gathering songs, there's a magnetic quality songs have, and they'll go to each other. And the first one seemed like a hello, this is me, the new me, sort of, the front door. So they're funnier and, you know, whatever. The second ones are more heavy. And then the third one was the kitchen, where like, it's conversational and like a radio play. Hmm.
We talked a little bit about the difference between the years when you were making records with Warner and your own record label and being an independent artist. And you referenced quickly just the monetary part of it, of being able to monetize the creation of a new record. On the whole, Is it easier or harder as an independent artist to make a record? I mean, yes, certainly there might not be an advance up front, but there are also fewer cooks in the kitchen, so to speak.
Yeah.
Is it easier or harder nowadays to make a record?
For someone in my position, which isn't everyone's position, like I had a jump start for a lot of independent musicians, it's as easy because I really did what I wanted for the most part when I was on Warner Brothers. But it's, I'm just not the kind of person who can like engineer my own record. So I still have to hire. I go in and I sort of write as I record the final tracks, if you know what I mean. So it still ends up being more expensive for me than other people.
Mm.
But not nearly as much because of, but it takes me a long time. Like I'll write a song and one pass, but then it takes me a long time to arrange it or see where the lyrics want to go.
On your website, you offer literally every song of yours for free as something that can be listened to in real time. You also offer them as a download. Was that a bit of an arm wrestle to get some of those songs back from Warner?
I never got any back from Warner, and they'll never return the masters, or that was what I was told by that lawyer. But I do own the rights in Canada and the world in some cases. Sometimes I don't, but not the U.S. Well, here I am on public radio. There are a lot of gray areas and a lot of places where it's no one really knows, and a lot of disorganization in music companies and publishing companies. I didn't even know my publishing company had been bought by another one. Mm. And the new one didn't even know I was on the roster. You know, it's like, crazy, which is fine, but everyone's having to sort out a lot of messes when they could be outside, you know, having a beer. Mm. It's time consuming.
Well, I want to hear another tune before we run out of time today, but I also want to ask you a little bit about when and how you got into painting, because you offer some of your artworks on your website.
Why do you want to know when and how?
Well, I'm curious when you were inspired to start making art that wasn't musical.
Ah, but it is musical. I've always seen songs really before I wrote them.
You've seen them?
Yeah, them. And I used to like keep notes of, I'd see full-blown paintings. So I couldn't paint. So I just write down what I would paint if I could. And finally I started, I was so bored in the studio one day while someone mixed and moved the kick drum sounds around I said, I have to do something if I don't, or I'll go crazy. So I got some paper from Woolworths and cheap paints and started doing abs, just painting, doodling. And through the abstract drawing, I learned how to get more realistic from that direction instead of sitting down and trying to draw something realistic.
You said something interesting there, and I want to ask if it works the other way. You said you often see songs.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean you then also hear visual works? Like if you went to a museum and you were in front of an exhibit of paintings, would you hear things as a result of seeing?
That's a good question. What do you think?
Yeah, I would imagine probably you would.
Yeah.
Knowing how much music is in you, I would imagine that you would.
Yeah, if you gave me anything and asked me what I hear, I could give you it right away if you asked me. I don't always, unless asked.
So is that how many of your songs come to be, at least initially, is a result of seeing something? You know, maybe out a window, and maybe when you're traveling through this area, in fact, looking out the window, just things that you see or things that you read?
It could be things I read too, and sometimes it's just the tilt of someone's head from the back, you know, watching their back. It's just like this most poignant human quality, just from a small tilt, some beautiful innocence. But a song on the new record, which isn't out yet, it's called Consider the Lily, is from an image being in a church in Brussels where I was watching and there was a statue that the sunlight was catching. And it was glowing, and at the same time, people were streaming by. And that's how the song looks, extrapolated into words.
Do you have a release date for Consider the Lily?
I wouldn't trust it, but I hope by around the equinox, the spring solstice, hoping that in a few months.
And the information will be up at janesibbery.com and on your Facebook page, probably, when you have a real date.
Yeah.
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 Well, thank you so much for stopping by today. It's been a real pleasure to have you in.
you were very creative about sorting out my route from my tour page and figuring out exactly when I could drop by the studio. Just
trying to keep my radar open.
I couldn't say no, but thank you.
Will you play us one more?
This is a new song, and I can't really play it, but I just wanted to, you know, these are words that are really in my heart to, if I'm going to play to people, say things like this. So I'll just play a little bit of it. Try to keep it under 3 minutes so you can use it as some kind of hit. Oh, darling, there's a man a-knocking at your door at midnight most days. He's a handsome stranger with lots of wisdom, and he's come to help you on your way. Oh, my darling, there will be such love ahead. Some days you will feel like you can fly. You'll feel like Hercules standing like pillars of steel against the azure sky. And then there will be other times when you don't think you have the will to carry on, to carry out your dreams. And you'll choke on truth and you'll get sick instead. But oh my darling, the wondrous thing is that help is everywhere. And it comes to us in the strangest ways. Like, here's an example. In springtime when peeper frogs rise from the mud, they're calling, they're laughing, they're crying for love. At the top of their lungs like you thought you never could. So they did instead. Healing is everywhere. Oh, life is a precious ring given to us by love, to polish and shine with all we learn. Like perhaps forgiving our mothers and getting on with loving ourselves. And shining will be the eyes of friends who will hold our perfection as we descend into darkness. On our way to the miracle of spring. Do you know what I mean? That's the kind of song.
That is Jane Sibbery, live here on Jefferson Public Radio. Information on her music and her art. Well, music is art, but on her painting at janesibbery.com. The new record, due out relatively soon, called Consider the Lily. You'll find information on her website or on her Facebook page. Jane, thanks again for coming by and visiting with us here at JPR.
Our pleasure.
And Allie, thank you for coming in as well.
Thank you.